Hi, Ashley.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm very well. I'm very well. I hope you can hear me well.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Otherwise, we can always package this and do a Verizon commercial and make some money off of it. So, I have to say, Resurrection Road. I was riveted to this.
Oh,
Absolutely
wow. Thank
riveted.
you.
It's a slow burn until you get to about the 43-minute mark.
That's interesting. I actually think it's a little bit too quick moving for me. I would have liked to have slowed it down even more if possible, but money constraints and so on and so forth. But
Sure.
yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because about the 43-minute mark, that's when we get some reveals into the mystery that is surrounding all of this. But I like the
Right.
way that it is so well paced. Working with your editor, Tommy Agard, I have to say, quite impressive in your pacing here as we build. The tension builds, and I'm
Yeah.
watching and I'm wondering. Okay, what's going on? I totally understood from a historical aspect why the black soldiers were sent on this mission, because as history has shown us, they were always, especially Civil War era, they were always sent to do the missions that the white soldiers didn't want to do. So I
Right,
love that
exactly.
aspect. But then to watch and see the command. Malcolm Goodwin is stellar as
Yes,
Barabbas.
we were lucky to get him for sure.
Just so original. But as I said, and it's burning, and we're getting to know each of these characters. We're getting to know Barabbas, we're getting to know Washington and Cuffy and Blunt and Stevens, and you start liking all of them. We see their individual personalities come out. And that I find so interesting. But then things take a turn. And then when they take a turn, it's strap in, because what you've got coming after that is like, whoa. So this is so well structured and paced out, Ashley. I'm curious where the idea for this story arose and how you set about putting pen to paper to develop this as you have.
I'll try and give the short answer is I had an idea that was quite different, to be honest. My initial idea that I pitched and then actually wrote was had the same characters on both sides,
Okay.
the Confederates and the Union soldiers, the Yankees, I guess we'll call them, but and the same characters to a huge degree, but the vampires were not part of the original story. So the original story, they ran into the Confederates, and then they ran into a third entity, which was a lot more like the movie Southern Comfort. I don't know if you're familiar with that film, the film from the early 80s, where they run in, or Deliverance, where they run into a third entity that starts killing them. And so then they kind of have to team up. But it's just because of budgets and other reasons, and because we were doing kind of a horror, it just was a little bit of a bigger movie. And a little bit more of a character-driven film, which is why I was like, "Oh, I'm glad that you thought the pacing was good because, as I'd originally written it, it was much more of a character film." And so then the producers basically were like, "Why don't we make this a bit more of a genre film and add vampires to it?" And it was one of those kind of like, I know I'm not really selling it as if I'm a brilliant, this is all my idea, but the truth of the matter is. It was one of those, well, we want to make a movie, and sometimes you just have to make a movie, and I don't have the power yet to just do the exact films I would like to do. So we added vampires and we changed things and the plot changed dramatically. But because I spent so much time writing these characters the first time around, even though I cut a lot out, they were kind of there, and so I was able to tell the actors their backstory. You know, like, in a way, it almost helped it, because I knew these characters in a different world. They were always in the Civil War, but they wasn't the film that I was currently making, but that's okay. And so I think that helped a lot. And then when I did the vampire film, I thought, well, I don't want it to just be From Dusk Till Dawn. We need something else going on.
Right.
So that's when I came up with the idea of Quantrill. Well, I'd done research anyway, and there were people, there was a guy called Quantrill and his raiders, and there were, you know, Anderson and certain people that fought for the South, Bloody Bill Anderson, so on. So I just used them as kind of an idea, and I thought, well, what if they were vampires, and that's what made them so mean and evil? And then I just threw that in there. So the idea that he was the guy that had been a slave catcher before and that the wife was still alive and all those things, you know, spoiler alert, all those things I added after I'd been given the consignment of adding vampires to the film.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm very happy to hear that you enjoyed it so much. And I think the editing, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Tommy. I think he did a hell of a good job and is really a great, great editor. I can't imagine the film without him. Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh, definitely, Ashley. I'm very impressed with Tommy's editing. And considering he cut his teeth working on films like Age of Ultron, The Avengers, and Thor, you can't get a better learning ground than the Marvel Universe. So,
100%.
So I'm very impressed with his editing on this one. And, you know, he had done a lot of shorts, but learning on those tentpole films where everything is so stringent in terms of excellence, that was a great learning ground for him. And and he brings all of that. He paid attention.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I can't, there's nothing I can say that can fault him or his editing. But it is interesting you bring up the Marvel universe, and yes, he cut his teeth in action films, and that's the only things he done a rough assembly, of course, and you know, then we sat together and mentioned the whole film. But there were definitely moments where I was like, no, you know what? Let's hold on this shot. I want this to feel more like a film from the late 60s and 70s and slightly less, you know, let the action scenes, then we can start doing cutting. But, you know, he definitely at first was a little bit choppier than I would be because of Marvel, because he comes from action.
Sure.
But as soon as I was like, you know, let's stretch it out, let's make it a little bit more Sergio Leone and a little less Sam Peckinpah, you know, he was very quick to adapt and change the feel of the film. You know, I thought, look, the film's going to speed up and speed up and speed up. I don't want it to feel that quick in the first half.
Right.
And he was like, oh, okay, great. You know, like, we don't need to cut to everyone who's talking every time. We can hold on the wide, or we can hold on, you know, on the bastard, I should say.
And you really do.
Not that he had that many choices in, honestly. I didn't have a lot of coverage because it was so... stop the time.
Well, also, when you look at the topography of where you were in Oklahoma shooting this, number one, the location is great. And I love Samuel's work as your cinematographer, Samuel Calvin. I love how he makes use of the lighting. We've got day, we've got night, we've got filtered sun through the trees. We get a lot of visual texture, and I really like that because it doesn't look flat. And because of the angles and the blocking, you never know what's behind another tree, or, okay, there's a shadow created over here because the sun flare is over here to the right. So what might be coming out of there? What is the noise? And this is where your sound comes into play to piggyback with your visuals, to amp up that tension as to what they're going through. But I love that location, and it really feeds into this story. And it lets us become comfortable in the environment as well as learning about each of our soldiers. Because each one brings something different to the table. And I loved seeing that, learning about each of them individually and how they're interacting with each other. The rivalry amongst them, the brotherhood at work. Really well done. But the environment, this location, outdoors, is so key and so critical. And then when you get indoors, where did you find that fort location? Or did your production designer, did O'Shea build it?
Before I get into the indoors, the outdoors, yes, I think they're key. We shot, yes, all of that, except for some stolen inserts. All of that was shot in Oklahoma. A couple of inserts of trees were shot in Arkansas. Just because the trees, Arkansas's woods are a little bit thicker, and they just looked a little bit more Civil War-y. Mm-hmm. So we thought when they're looking into the trees and they're looking things, those are actually Arkansas. But yes, the vast majority was Oklahoma. When I say vast, 99% was Oklahoma. And the location was everything. There's only one scene that I regret the location on, and I won't say which scene it is. But otherwise, I thought it was fantastic and everything looked great. The interiors is, or the fort, is two different things. It is a real fort for some of it, and it was Fort Gibson, which is in Oklahoma. And then a lot of the interiors were a mixture of the real fort that we redressed and then set. So the telegraph room was a set, the entire dungeon was a set built, and I guess the gun, obviously, was a set. Everything else we did there, so like the corridors were there, other things. It was a couple of years ago that I filmed it, but yeah. So O'Shea did it. The lighting was fantastic, and I always had faith in Sam, and we get on really well. And he just shot my most recent film. In fact, I brought him on to shoot. I made another film a month and a half ago in Mississippi. But I was so impressed by the production design and the art department because, you know, going in, we had such a small budget and, you know, the script was still pretty big. And I thought, there's forts and there's corridors, there's dungeons. Like, are we able to do this? Can we find these locations? Do they even exist? And then they built it all in, like, 2 weeks. I mean, it was insane. And I was like, holy shit. These are really good. And I've never worked on I've worked on set. I've never directed a film on full set before. I'd only ever done locations before.
Mm-hmm.
My first film was set in New York and my second one was set in L.A. So, you know, those are easy to do. And they're like mumblecore type films. Mm-hmm. They weren't horror. So it was really, I was really impressed. I mean, everyone in Oklahoma, the entire crew, I mean, everyone was just really, really first rate. And they all, you know, they came in to finish the set. They came in on days off. They came in on weekends.
Wow.
I really can't speak more highly about everyone involved on this film. If anything, the weakest link might have been me. Everyone else was really, really good. That was just, you know, it was a surprisingly good experience because I'll be honest, I went there with quite a lot of trepidation thinking, my God, you know, we got 17 days to shoot a period piece Civil War vampire film. That's insane. But somehow we did it, and mostly because they were all so professional. You know, we had one mistake after another, one piece of bad luck after another. We had a tornado, and then we had two of our main actors had COVID the first week.
Oh, God.
We had to move things around. I mean, it was really a nightmare. But, you know, somehow you end up with a movie at the end of it.
It's amazing, isn't it? I have to say, inside the fort, in the tombs area. Not the dungeon, but the tomb.
No, that was the other set. Thank you. I'd forgotten. Sorry. That was the set as well. I knew there was one more set.
That is absolutely beautiful. The way that Samuel lit that with each one of the little covens or holes, shall we say, with its own light. And, I mean, the sandy color of the walls, it plays so beautifully.
Oh, it's great. It's my favorite. That might be my favorite scene in the movie, is the scenes that take place in there. I quite like a couple of the other jumps, and there's a few other moments I think are okay. But that scene, when they go there and the camera comes around, and you do that kind of like, we pan left, and then he enters, and then we pan left, and then he appears on the other side, and then she arrives through the other entrance. And then they're waiting, and then Mike arrives. That whole scene, I just think, is really a good little scene.
That is actually my favorite sequence. That's my favorite scene in the entire film. Because you don't expect that, Ashley. You don't expect, after what we've already seen as we're going through the fort, you don't expect something that looks that serene. Because it looks serene.
Right.
It has a very beautiful cast to it, visual tone. So I really love that one. But now something that I appreciate here is that, because you said that the corridors within the fort, those are real, you didn't build them, you're using them. It seems that Samuel had, there's some width there. They're not extremely so narrow, you can't get a camera and light package down there. Is that correct? Did he have room to navigate?
Which corridor? Okay, so most of the corridors were real, but the one corridor where they go, the one corridor leads to the basement, where we're in the basement and we see that small corridor out there.
Yeah,
that's part of that set. So that particularly narrow one is a set. However, we didn't have any fly-out walls. I mean, they did build us fly-away walls, but we just didn't use them.
Oh, okay.
So, mainly for time. So everything was pretty constrained. The lighting was, you know, he did a lot of clever lighting, and that corridor had a roof, had a ceiling to it. If memory serves, the basement did not have a ceiling, so we were able to light it like they got lit, you know, in the old days. But the corridor did, and I have no idea how he lit that. I don't remember, but he did. And it looks really great, and we used a dolly. I think we used very little Steadicam in that film, sometimes. But mainly we used dollies, if we could, because I wanted it to feel more old-fashioned.
What were you using for all the exteriors? Yeah. I'm guessing you did not lay dolly track down outside as they're trekking through the woods.
For the most part, we did. Yes.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. The Steadicam, we use Steadicam. I mean, we may have used it a little bit more, but we use it when they're a little lost right at the beginning and they're walking towards the camera and then we circle around them. That was Steadicam. And then we use Steadicam when they're running, when they first arrive at the fort and they're running towards the entrance, and they're each kind of waiting by a wall and running past each other. That's a Steadicam shot, and there may be a couple of others, but all the stuff of like the Confederates walking or them walking along, or that would have all been dolly tracked. When they find the body, we had the reasonably big crew, so you know I was like, yeah, lay 100 feet of dolly track, and they did.
Wow.
I annoyed them, but,
given the terrain, I would have thought that they would have been just shooting on a shoulder rig or something like that. But wow.
Yeah.
That's ambitious, dolly track.
It was quite ambitious. That's the thing. We laid out some rules, Sam and I, and one of the rules, we laid out like five rules to live by. And, you know, of course you can change, you know, rules are there to be broken. But one of the rules was handheld is your enemy. Now, there were scenes that had to be handheld or felt better handheld, but when they first run into the Confederates and they're threatening to hang them, that's all handheld and should be handheld. But on the whole, we just thought so many indie films low-budget horror, low-budget any, low-budget people sitting around an apartment. They're always handheld because it's the only way you can get through the day. You know, oh, we got to do 32 setups today. Let's just put it on your shoulder. We'll get through it quickly, and we'll jump cut the whole damn scene. And I just thought, you know what? I want this to feel like an older movie, so I don't want it to feel jump cutty. I don't want it to feel handheld, like we just had to get through the day. We will get through the day with a dolly, with sticks, with, you know, a boom. And so that's basically the rule we live by. So, yeah, it was quite ambitious, but that's basically what we did.
Wow.
And, you know, the scene in the barn where he fights in the barn, I don't know if that was dolly track, but, for example, we did something like 42 setups that day.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, we moved quick, but also tried to keep it classic.
Imagine
what we could have done with 24 days.
Oh, my God. Now, were you because you have some beautiful night scenes in there, were you shooting night for night?
Yes. Shot night for night the entire time, I believe, except for, obviously, in some of the, you know, the interviews we would have shot days. But we shot, let me see, I think we shot the last 4 days were night. So it might have only been the last three, but I think it was four. We did it might have been three and a half. We might have done a split and then three nights in a row. I remember all of us being really exhausted on the second. The first night's always easy. You're like, make it. And then that second night, you're like, oh my God. And there's photographs of us, and we look like we're about to die. But the film I just did now was 14 nights in a row.
Oh my God.
So that I thought I was going to go insane on.
Here again with your night shoots, I've got to say, the color, it's not a deep blue-black inkiness. You've got some of that, but there's also like a forest green, bluish tinge to the night scenes, especially as we fade into negative space, like on the back left as we're looking at the screen. Samuel did a beautiful job of lighting this.
Yeah.
And then in your color correction,
it's
standout.
Yeah, and we had a color palette, and the vampires, we decided, I don't remember why we thought this, but maybe because green's a little, I mean, obviously grass, and there's so much green on Earth, but green as a kind of at night, or green as a smoke, just seemed out of this world kind of color.
Yeah,
I don't know. For some reason, we associated it with vampires. I'm not sure why. And so we just thought it'd be interesting if, as we got more and more towards the fort, the color went more and more green. You know, there's not that much green in the first half. But, you know, especially as it gets night, exactly. That's right. All the lights were green. All the lighting was very green. All the dungeon is really quite green. Also, because I think green is associated with sickness.
Yeah.
And, you know, vomit, obviously, and other things. So, you know, it made us just think, like, you know, this is kind of harsh and it feels uncomfortable as opposed to, you know, red.
Well, of course, and we need the red. We need the red for bloodshed. Because we do have,
exactly.
Yes, we have a good amount of bloodshed happening. And I have to say that of those attack sequences are really wonderful. And not just vampire attacks, but also shooting. A bullet to the head, a bullet here. You've got a great squib burst of blood or a VFX of it. So I really like it, and you build up, you use your bloodletting very judiciously, Ashley, so that we don't see a lot of bloodshed early in the film. Here again, we start seeing it really like around that 43-minute mark or so. We start seeing slashed throats and spurting blood. And okay, so you build us up to that, and I really appreciate that because you don't get tired of it early on, and it also the blood we initially see in the first half of the film, that pretty much comes with the spoils of war. You expect right. to see that. So you don't give anything away. I appreciated how you eased into the bloodletting in the film. Hand in hand with that, that climactic scene with Michael Madsen and Malcolm Goodwin, Quantrill and Barabbas, wow. You cast Michael Madsen perfectly. Perfectly, Ashley. I think it's one of the best performances I've seen from him in many a day.
Yeah, I think he's really good in it. Yes, I think he's really good. I wrote that little there was originally going to be a whole big old fight, and I think both me and him, first of all, we were always pressed for time, but I had, at this point, had grown very, very tired of choreographing yet another fight between a soldier and a vampire. I was getting a little bored, and Michael Madsen is, you know, I won't say notoriously lazy, but he certainly likes to do less if possible. And I just thought, you know what, why don't we, since you're the big boss, just give you a speech instead, and then, you know, you can attack him and it could be a slightly quicker death, but we could build on the tension instead. And I had this idea about vampires not dreaming because they don't sleep because yeah. they're dead, but they're not really dead. And I don't know, I literally wrote it the night before, and then he learned it that afternoon, and then I think his performance in that scene is really, really good.
It is.
And in the earlier scene we talked about in the catacombs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he's really good. We got on very, very well. He really had a good time, I think, with me and Sam. And he's a good actor. I wish he'd do better material or people would use him more.
Yeah.
But he's great.
But that dreaming, dreaming monologue that you wrote is to watch his face, and you could see that he's imagining what his life, what his 400 years of going between life and death, you can see him imagining or being very wistful, wishing he had that.
Right.
And just, right, it was exactly. an incredible, really powerful delivery. He really nailed it, and I really love that scene and his performance there. Now, something else you did here that I really love is you bring in Triana Brown as Sula, as our Native American.
That's right.
I mean, that's how right. cool was that to bring in not just a Native American, but a female? Now, was it always your intention? Did you always write that character as a female?
Yeah, I always. I don't know if she was Native American until we changed it into the version of the film that you watch.
Okay.
But even in the original script, there was a female character. She may have been black.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember now. But she may not have been. She may have been Native American. And there was always a female character who ended up saving one of them. Like, oh, that aspect, it wasn't with the flowers and stuff because they weren't vampires. So, you know, it was a slightly different scenario. But it was still the same concept of you thought she was dead and then she wasn't and then she came back and, you know, and so other than, you know, so that always existed, and I always thought that was cool, and I always liked the idea that you thought she was dead, and that she then came back. So, yeah, that always existed, and I think she was really great. I wanted to make her slightly more sassy. You know, people have given me a little bit of shit for, like, you know, people didn't talk that way in those days and stuff, and I'm like, oh, for God's sake, they weren't vampires in those days either, and it's obviously not that kind of a film. It's very, you know, there's a lot of anachronistic mistakes in it, but so what?
You contemporized, you really contemporized her vocabulary and her delivery, and it works!
Very much so. Yeah, I think it works too. I actually had a little... That was funny. I had a little pushback with producers on that one. I had to in the editing, me and Tommy were both like, you know, it's cool, it's fun. You know, I think people will get it. Younger audiences will get it. Watching this film expecting Gone with the Wind.
This is not Mary McDonnell in Dances with Wolves with the stilted English or anything like that. And
and I didn't want to do it that way. Exactly. I thought, like, she's lived, you know, it's the 1860s. She's lived there for a long time. It's the east side of America. You know, this is not Comanche. So why couldn't she speak with an American accent? I thought, like, yeah, why not?
Yeah. And it works well because of the repartee that's going back and forth with Barabbas and Washington and Cuffy and Blunt. Yeah. So it works well because she holds her own against them and their sassiness, their sarcasm. So it fits really well. I really like that you went with a female Native American. You've got a very diverse film happening here, Ashley. Nobody can ever accuse you of lacking diversity in your film. You've got white, black, Native American. You've got the North and the South and vampires. So you've got everything covered here in this film.
I've got everything. I've got everything. And the film I made just before that recently has been picked up for distribution, but we're just, you know, finishing up the deliveries and stuff, is all female. It's nothing but women. It's a very kind of drama, Bergman-esque, with two sisters.
Wow.
So, yeah, I like to not just write for white cis males. I like to, you know, write for everyone if possible.
You shook it up. You did write for everyone here.
Yeah.
Now, there's one other aspect of the film I want to ask you about, and that is your score.
Yeah.
Your score, Jacques Rothbauer, I love his work. I love what he did with Bob Trevino Likes It, Catch a Killer, Spy High. So you bring him in here. This is an interesting score that he delivers here. What were you looking for musically from Jacques?
Okay, so let me just double back for 1 second whilst we're talking about Jacques and just say, whilst everyone else, including Sam, who I brought in on my most recent film, but I met him on that film, whilst everyone was basically handed to me, O'Shea, the prop guys, everyone. I had a choice of even the editor was handed to me. I had the choice between a couple of DPs and I chose Sam, but they were offered to me because, again, it's Oklahoma and it's not LA.
Right.
So my choices weren't that vast and it's last minute and it was low budget. But Jacques, I'd worked with on a couple of other films. Jacques, I knew from my days at USC. So Jacques, the only person I actually brought in myself from the get-go. Now, as I said, I, you know, have reused Sam and would like to reuse O'Shea if ever possible. So, you know, that's all fine. But Jacques, I've known for a long time. And so we already have gone to the point where, you know, I can be very honest with him. There's no BS with him. We have a kind of a second-hand nature to each other. So I like to use, as a lot of people do, as everyone does, temp music. But unlike most people, from my understanding, I'm not married to temp music at all. It's a little bit more old school. I use temp music in a very kind of, this is just to set the mood. It is not edited to the temp music. I immediately throw it out the minute that I show it to Jacques. It's like, it's just to get the mood. And this is another thing that I've learned that, you know, a lot of producers today don't necessarily understand that. And they're like, no, this temp music sounds wrong because they expect the score to sound just like the temp music. But I'm always of the opinion the score should surprise me. I'm not writing the music. Let him write some music that surprises me. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to sound like Jaws, you know, because that was written for Jaws or whatever. So we kind of went in on that. And originally, it's the only thing about the final version of the film, and I probably shouldn't throw people under the bus on this one, But originally, my concept and Jacques' concept was to have the film sound more like a Western.
Okay.
And slowly become more like a horror as the film progresses from a Western into a horror. I basically got shut down on that, and so we ended up doing basically horror the whole way through.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it worked. You seem to like it, so that's great. I think it worked a little better the other way, only that it doesn't advertise that this is a tense film. You know, it's advertising that this is more of a Western film, and then suddenly it goes in a different direction. So, you know, if I'd had my way, the music in the first half would be slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
But as the film went on, everything in the second half was all his original stuff anyway. And, you know, he's just a great, great composer.
Yeah,
and
he is.
I'm very lucky to be able to keep using him for next to nothing. I mean, he gives me a very, very cut rate. So I think the music he did in this is great. It's very, not normally, the film was so kind of, it needed to feel relentless, so we went a little bit Hans Zimmer. Not in style, but in concept of, you know, kind of almost wall-to-wall.
Sure.
Almost relentlessly moving forward. It's not normally how I like it. I normally like music a little bit more the old-fashioned way, the Bernard Herrmann way. Yeah, the cues.
Uh-huh.
It's not cues. But I think it needed to be a little bit more like something's driving. There's an underlining driving. And a lot of the sound, you know, there's a lot of sound design in the film, but a lot of the kind of ambient sound is actually him. It's actually Jacques.
It's through the music,
you know,
yeah.
It's actually part of the score. Yeah. What people think is ambient, it sometimes is ambient, but sometimes it's actually Jacques. I think he really did a really good job on this. I think, at least for me, it's his best score.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think he did a really great job.
It's definitely different than what I've heard, like what he did for Bob Trevino Likes It. Totally different. And I love that because it shows me the range that Jacques has in terms of what he can deliver.
Yeah, 100%. And he's so easy to work with. You know, a lot of composers get very kind of, and this is the same with Sam, by the way. I'll say this about both of them, although they're doing completely different jobs. They're very easy when it comes to me disagreeing with them. They're very malleable in going, okay, if you didn't like that, we'll do it your way, or we'll try something else. I mean, it doesn't need to be my way. But, you know, Sam never gets offended if I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I like this, or I downright don't. You know, he'll immediately change the composition, or he'll say, okay, well, how do you want to do it? But there's no like, hey, you deal with the actors and I deal with camera. And it's the same with Jacques. If I'm like, you know what, this horn that you added, it kind of sucks, and remove it. I don't think I'd ever put it that way, but if I was like, it's a little too much, let's get rid of the horn, or you know what, I like this, but I don't like everything else, how about just a single note across the scene? Even if it's not what he wrote, he's like, okay, that's fine, like, it's your movie, and I'm happy to do what you want. And it makes working with them very good, but also very collaborative, because they often have better ideas than I do, but they're also not married to their ideas the same way that I'm not married to mine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the important thing about making movies, especially at this budget level, where
yeah.
we're all busting our ass for not that much reward.
Well, Ashley, you have delivered a very fine product with Resurrection Road. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's well done. You've got interesting characters. The story, it's creative. Just really good job. And I want to see more. I want to see more from you.
Hopefully, sometime next year, the one I'm editing right now will come out. So we'll see. Set in Mississippi. It's a slasher horror film.
Oh, good.
Makes fun of, to a degree, slasher horror film.
Well, I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
I will be on the lookout for it. Ashley, this has been
great.
So wonderful.
I hope to speak to you then.
Oh, I look forward to
much.
It. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today about Resurrection Road. And I can't wait till we do it again.
Yeah, me too, for sure.
Thanks, Ashley. Bye-bye.
Bye.